Welcome to another inspiring message recorded at Thrive Church, a church passionate about moving people towards Jesus. We hope that today's message will help and inspire you in your faith journey.
Let me start by telling you about a general. His name was General Darius, and he was once the most respected leader in the whole kingdom of Persia. He was known not only for his unmatched skill in battle, but also for his loyalty, his discipline, and his deep sense of justice. Kings trusted him, soldiers admired him, and the people looked to him as a symbol of honor. But beneath the armor and beneath the accolades, two quiet enemies lurked and lived in Darius's heart: anger and lust. And though he kept them hidden for many years, he never truly dealt with them. He simply controlled them outwardly, but inwardly they grew. One day, while stationed in a peaceful province, he got bored and he met a young, beautiful lady called Celine, who was the wife of a local judge, a magistrate. She was kind, she was intelligent, she was beautiful. At first, he simply admired her from a distance. But as time went by, he found excuses to start speaking to her. Then came some lingering touches, and soon his desire turned to obsession. And despite knowing that it was wrong, Darius pursued her. She resisted at first, reminding him of his vows and of his duty, but Darius's charm and power wore her down. Then began an affair, hidden from her husband and from the people. But as we know, secrets don't stay buried forever. One evening, Celine's husband discovered the truth. Everybody say, Aish. Enraged and humiliated, he confronted Darius. And though this magistrate was no warrior, he was a man of honor. And he demanded that Darius confess and then leave his wife alone. And Darius, General Darius, consumed by anger at being challenged, struck the man down dead in a fit of rage. The murder sparked a scandal, and the king, heartbroken that his most trusted general had fallen so low, stripped Darius of his rank, his title, and banished him from the kingdom. And years later, Darius wandered alone, a fugitive. He often sat by rivers and watched the water flow, remembering what he had lost: his honor, his command, his name. And he would whisper this to himself: I conquered cities, but I could not conquer myself. My anger and my lust, they were the true enemies, and I fed them until they devoured everything that I loved. Today we're talking about anger and lust, church. Two feelings, if we can call them that, that affect us so deeply. And Jesus knew that they do affect us as human beings so profoundly. And we might be struggling with one or both of them, but there's hardly a human being on this planet that doesn't struggle with these two. And so Jesus tackles them, and he tackles them head on in his Sermon on the Mount because he knew we struggle and because he wanted to set us free. My earnest, sincere prayer today, everybody, is that you won't feel as I preach that this is directed at you in any, that you won't feel like there's an arrow coming your way, but that you will feel the tenderness and the love and the strength of Christ and his words and how badly he wants us to be free from these things. Amen. Let's go to the text, Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 to 30. Before we get into the text, let me just share with you that Jesus deals with anger first, and then there's no break in his teaching. He simply continues like a river flowing, talking about lust. He turns the corner from anger to lust seamlessly, and it's important to note that, because what we take from that is Jesus views anger and lust in the same light. They are Siamese twins. They go together so often, and we'll discover why that is. Matthew chapter 5, this is in the Sermon on the Mount, the greatest sermon ever preached. Jesus says, "You've heard that our ancestors were told you must not murder. And if you commit murder, you're subject to judgment. But I say, if you're even angry with someone, you're subject to judgment." Just if Jesus' teaching sounds confrontational to you, just hang with me and it'll come to light. He says, "If you call someone an idiot, you're in danger of being brought before the court. And if you curse someone, you're in danger of the fires of hell." With the amount of taxi drivers we put up with, this is particularly challenging in South Africa. I reckon you could read this in America and it would be okay, but in South Africa. "So if you're presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you," in other words, if there's anger, if there's fracture, if there's division, "leave your sacrifice there at the altar, go and be reconciled to that person, then come and offer your sacrifice to God." In other words, it's interesting that Jesus says the only thing that should stop us from worship is reconciliation with our fellow human beings. "When you're on the way to your court with your adversary, settle your differences quickly. Otherwise, your accuser may hand you over to the judge, who'll hand you over to an officer, and you'll be thrown into prison. And if that happens, you surely won't be free again until you've paid the last penny." Now check it out. He just carries on as if he was talking about anger. Now he just turns the corner to lust. "And you've heard the commandment that says you must not commit adultery. But I say anyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So if your eye, even your good eye, causes you to lust, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your whole body, than for your whole body to be thrown into hell." Can we just take a short left here? I've discovered as a pastor, how many people have one good eye and one dodgy eye? I never thought, people love to tell me I've got a good eye and a dodgy eye. Jesus clearly knew that people struggle. There's one good eye and there's one dodgy eye. "And if your hand, even your stronger hand, causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell." Anger and lust are partners, is what Jesus is saying. Both anger and lust, look at the similarities with me this morning. Both begin in the heart and not the body. They manifest themselves in the body, but they begin in the heart. They are both examples of how sin begins externally and then internally and then moves externally. They both devalue others. This is the key. Anger reduces someone to an enemy, while lust reduces people to an object. Both lust and anger, they make us slaves. Both try to obtain a control in our lives, a pleasure or a significance outside of God. Both are like powerful, powerful things in our lives, and they can unravel relationships, they can unravel friendships, they can unravel communities, and they can unravel our personal integrity if they're not dealt with. And both, Jesus says, can bring us into the danger of judgment. So shall we start light and let's talk anger, and then we'll delve our way into lust a little bit later. It's gone very quiet in this Presbyterian church, Boksburg. I hope you're being more encouraging than Edenvale is. All right, let's talk anger. Dallas Willard says, anger, what is it? Anger is a response to a perceived threat or wound. And this is the thing, it includes a will to harm or exact payment from the one that's hurt us. The thing about anger is it's wounded us, it's hurt us, and we turn that from hurt to vengeance, to exact, we hulle moet betaal, julle. That's the thing with anger, right? So the thing is, anger is a secondary emotion. This is the thing that I'm discovering, even as I map my own anger journey. And I chatted to a very wise person, and he reminded me the other day to say, just remember, anger is a secondary emotion, meaning that anger has been triggered by something primary, something deeper. Anger is an emotion, but it has arrived in our lives as a result of something else. Let me lie on the couch and you can be my shrink and let me tell you about my current anger or some of it. I feel so angry with our local government, with our municipalities, particularly with Ekurhuleni, because this is where we live. And I'm not saying it's right, so don't come toy toy with me now. And I'm just saying my anger. And it's because it's a secondary emotion, because I feel a deep sense of betrayal that they don't use the money the way they should. I feel a deep sense of frustration with their incompetence. The fact that they can't plan to get the grass cutting tenders done. They can't order the street lights. They can't fix the potholes. Are you with me? So I feel like frustrated that the poor are always the ones to suffer as a result of that. I feel frustrated because Ekurhuleni's metro should be one of the wealthiest metros in the entire country, because we have the airport and the Aerotropolis and we've got businesses and manufacturing and all sorts, and we don't have competent people running the stuff that need to run the stuff. Again, I'm not saying my anger's right. I'm just telling you about my, you can feel the passion in my, whew. There's primary stuff.